ICEA Gear has outfitted over 10,000 bow hunters across the country, and we're continuing to raise the bar when it comes to bow hunting camo. New for the 23 season, we introduce our never-before-seen panel fabric system designed to be dead quiet, along with our patent-pending bow hunting collar. ICEA Gear. Features and function built for bow hunters by bow hunters. Learn more at asiogear.com.
Hey, before we jump into this next podcast, let's talk a little bit about Barebow Hunters. Barebow Hunters was a conception of mine to bring traditional bow hunting into the digital world. I know the value of traditional bow hunting, and I want to pass that on to other hunters and to other archers that want to get into bow hunting. And the way that we did this was through a Facebook group, through this podcast, through our YouTube channel, and through all of our social media outlets. But one of the things that we really wanted to do was create products that you could have that would promote traditional bow hunting, to represent traditional bow hunting to those around you. And some of those products are like hats and shirts and mugs and beer glasses and all these products that would start a conversation that might get you guys to be able to talk at, you know, like your family gatherings or your barbecues, or, you know, just even at a trade show or something like that. Something that, like, when somebody comes to your house and sees that you're drinking out of a Barebow Hunter coffee mug, and it says Barebow Hunter close on it, and it shows, you know, a hunter stalking an elk on a coffee mug, those are conversation starters. And it might turn that conversation into you bringing your bow out, showing it to him, and people just getting the interest up. That's what we're after. We're trying to bring traditional bow hunting to the forefront, just to show how important it is. And you know, it's something that's been around for thousands of years, and we want to promote that. So that is what we've done. If you want to check out our goods, just go to barebowhunter.com. That's barebowhunters.com, and then just go to the store, and you'll see all sorts of products that we are trying to promote traditional bow hunting. Representing it, really, is what we're trying to do. We're trying to represent traditional bow hunting. So go there, check it out. There's going to be new products almost every week. I guarantee you there'll be new products there. We're coming up with so many different designs, and we want to represent you guys. All right. Well, let's get into our next podcast. You're going to love this one.
Welcome to Barebow Hunter Podcast with your host, Nate Bailey, where we look to the ancient paths of our hunting ancestors to guide our future, where woodsmanship and hard work outweigh advanced shooting devices, where we value those who have gone before us and welcome those who are yet to come. Join us as we exchange valuable insight about the Barebow Hunter's lifestyle.
Welcome to another edition of Barebow Hunter's Podcast. Today we're going to talk about how to hunt in the backcountry. And when I define backcountry, I'm talking about wilderness stuff. Maybe, you know, 6-7 miles, 8 miles, sometimes 10 away from nearest roads. And the reason that I want to talk about that is because that's really why I got into bow hunting, as I wanted to have an adventure. Hunting should be an adventure. You get a lot more out of hunting than just killing an animal. There is so much more to it than that, and I wanted to extend that. That's the reason I started bow hunting. So this podcast, I'm going to kind of go over how I get up into the woods and what I do and what I take with me. I've had a lot of experience in the woods, spending a lot of different time and a lot of different ideas. I used to pack packs that were, you know, excess of 70 pounds, and now I'm down to a pack that's about 35, 40 pounds. And I want to pass on to you guys how I do this, because quite honestly, this is the reason that we get into bow hunting. That's why I'm kind of adamant about opportunity over anything else when it comes to bow hunting. So when I see seasons getting, you know, kind of cut and less time in the woods, it kind of goes against why I got into bow hunting in the first place. I rifle hunted for years, loved to rifle hunt,
But man, you know, only having a week here and a week there, it just leaves you with wanting more of the wilderness. And it's a total experience. I hunt for more reasons than just killing an animal. Now, that's the goal. It's so weird. It's hard to explain this. Man, and to the guys that hunt the backcountry, they know what I'm talking about. We're not just going out, just trying to, it's more than that. There's so much more to take in. If you look around and you start understanding the environment that you're in and the world that you're in, things just slow down and you start seeing the realities of what hunting should look like, or what the realities that only nature can bring. And so that's the big reason that I got into bow hunting in the first place. So I thought I would share with you today, and I'm going to get right into it. I know you guys don't want to hear me ramble on until we get into it, but I'm going to share with you kind of what my experience has been. I've been doing this for a long time now, and started in the 80s and kind of bow hunted like a rifle hunter, you know. Didn't take much with me in the woods, and I do little day trips and this and that. And I found out that bow hunting is one of those things where the day trips are pretty hard to do if you're hunting the stuff that I was trying to hunt. You have to pack your livelihood on your back. And, you know, when you get to a spot, what was happening is I was going into spots that were 5 miles in. So it'd take me, I'd have to either get up really early in the morning and get in there by daylight, because you want to get in there, you know, the bulls are going to be bugling daylight as they're moving off into their beds. And you kind of want to get into those feeding places early on and be able to follow them to their beds. Or another thing you do is you'd be in there until, and you'd start looking at your watch, and you knew the sun was going to start going down, and you kind of wanted to get out of there before it got dark if you're doing a day trip. So you missed, you know, the really important times of day when you could locate elk. Now, I'm not saying that I hunt elk, you know, morning and evenings as much as I do locate them in mornings and evening. Now, we have had several elk that we've got into, you know, during that time of day, mornings and evenings, but the majority of the elk that we kill have been in the middle of the day. So, but we always find those elk, it seems like, morning and evening, and then we go back into those areas or stay there now. That's what we do now, is we stay and hunt them when they're in a huntable area. You know, when they're bedded down with their cows, they become real huntable. So we've kind of changed over the years. We kind of got pushed into changing over the years, and we carry our life on our backs, and that's what I call it. And so I'm going to go over a little bit today of what I have learned. And there's a lot of different ideas on this. You guys can listen to a lot of different podcasts. I kind of listen to quite a few of these because I love hunting the backcountry and I want to hear what other people have to say. But there's a lot of stuff out there, a lot of different things that I don't think people are getting as nitty gritty with it for the over the counter, you know, move out of the state type stuff. So this is more practical for most of the guys that are listening to this. And if you basically just hunt off a road system, I'm hoping that this encourages you to get out and try it, because there's so much more adventure to be had. There's, you know, when you're out in remote places, the hunting just is, it's, you may be in, you know, like in the Cascades, you may be not around elk for 5-6 miles, but you're going to have to keep going in that amount of time, right? But in being up in those in the solitude of the high Cascades and being around all that stuff is all a part of the hunt. And yeah, it gets really tough up there, but I kind of trying to encourage people to get out and experience what it's like to live in the woods for a week. It'll change your life. And that's why I'm sharing this list of what I've done and what I've learned with you guys. So I guess the first thing we could talk about is packs. And there are so many different pack makers out there. We use Wilderness Packs. The design that we use has been around for quite a while. And a lot of people look at that and think, oh, well, you know, if that design's been around for a while, there's a lot of better stuff and new stuff out there that's really good. And there is, don't get me wrong. You know, XL makes a great pack. Kafaru makes an amazing pack. You could even go and get some of the Chinese packs like Alps, and those kind of packs are really nice. But for what I do, the Wilderness works real well. The one thing about it is it's a little bit heavier, but the solid frame that Wilderness uses is a big deal to me when I'm packing meat out. And I packed quite a bit of meat out on different packs, and I like having that big, wide, solid frame. A friend of mine, he helped pack. I've seen quite a few different packs as they're packing meat, and those narrow frames make it a little bit tough to pack out. When you got a big wide frame and you have it adjusted right, you could spread out that weight across all those inches, so you don't get the pull on you or the flopping around and things like that you get with some of the other frames. Now, I have not ran with like an XO pack, and I know a lot of guys that run the XO packs, and I have not packed meat with one, so I don't know how it runs. I have been around, and you guys, this is like non-biased stuff. This is just what I've seen, and I'm not trying to bag on anybody's pack here or anything else like that, but what I have seen is I've seen some of the now, and to be fair, they did not have meat shelves with them. They didn't buy the meat shelves, but man, I've seen the Kuyu pack. It was pretty sloppy with a big load on it. And that was just because I think maybe partially because the pack itself was becoming the meat shelf. But it's a great pack and light, super light. For the amount of stuff that you're carrying, it's super light before you get an animal down. I think it packs easier than say my Wilderness before you get an animal down. But the fact of the matter is the Wilderness is more like a pack board with a pack on top of it. Man, I don't want to say that either because the packs are just so extremely useful. I'm running the Impala, I'm running, the Bighorn and it's a fully American made. Like I said, it is heavier. It is heavier, but if you guys ever seen me, if I want to lose weight for my woods, I just need to lose it off my body. So for me to get super light packs, it cracks me up. I see guys doing it all the time. Well, I got to have this pack that only weighs, you know, so-and-so because, you know, the lightest pack I could have is the best pack I could have. Well, that's all well and good. But, you know, if you're 25, 30 pounds overweight, you know, you could really do yourself a favor by losing the weight rather than buying ultralight gear. You might as well just not worry about that kind of thing and just lose the weight. So that's the first thing is the pack. You know, if you plan on packing something out 5-6 miles, man, you better have something that's really solid. And that frame better be really solid. And that's what I work on is the frame first and then go with the pack later. Second thing, And this has been one of the things, you guys, that has probably changed my hunting more than anything, is the sleeping bag. And one of the big reasons is because the sleeping bag itself is used for so many different things. First, it's got to be packable. And we've started turning into hunting from our backs. So what that means is we have our life on our back. We don't make a base camp. And we just keep going until we find elk. And you have to do that in these low dense populations of elk. You know, when you're talking the Cascades, man, if you blow out some bulls in one spot, it may be 5, 10, 20 miles before you find more elk. That's the population densities of the Cascades. So you really need to have something that you could move with and you could, and because you're going to move. The minute that you blow one out or you kill them or whatever, it's going to make you move. So we have gone to down sleeping bags because they fold up smaller. I will tell you this, and I use a Nemo, and it's a 15-degree bag by their standard. Of course, none of those standards are kind of real. There is no real standard when it comes to sleeping bags. And I have been dirty cold in that thing in 30-degree weather. And the reason is because it's a down bag. I thought, oh, man, I'll buy a down bag. I see everybody using them, and they're going to be so warm. Well, one side of it is really warm depending on your pad. And I'll tell you, if you have an uninsulated pad and you're putting a down bag on top of that, you will be cold when it's cold outside, because the minute the down gets smushed, is that a right word, or gets decompressed, the minute that that happens, you lose all your insulation properties. The insulation properties are by the air that the feathers are trapping. So with that said, the space savings you get with an uninsulated pad is good. Like early season elk, you get away with it. I don't get cold early season elk, but later season, and then definitely if you're going to hunt like late season blacktail or something like that, oh my goodness, those down bags, you better have a great pad underneath them. So that's my little thing on down bags. The one thing with the down bag that's really good is the fact that it's small, so it fits in your pack and it's light for the amount of warmth that it does provide. They are awesome. I would tell you to get a down bag. Just make sure you get the right pad. Now that goes into the second thing, the pad. I hunt with a guy named Luke Dusenberry, and he shows up with a pad that was bigger when it was rolled up than his sleeping bag on these hunts. And I was like, wow. And he's like, dude, this is where it's at. You have to have a nice pad. And he's right. He was using a Big Agnes. And I want to say it was the big, he told me it was the big orange insulated one. And I don't know what that quite means, but it's the biggest orange one that they have that's insulated, that's still a backpacking pad. And when he blew that thing up, man, it covered him. And he's like, I don't know how tall he is. He's way taller than I am, and he's quite a bit bigger guy than I am. And it worked well for him. I've been using Climic, and I am going to go to the Big Agnes insulated, like I said, because I froze my butt off in my other pads. I have put on my other pads, I have put a thermal rest underneath it. So say like I'm, you know, like when I went on that rifle hunt for elk, I did put a thermal rest underneath the other pad, but I wasn't packing in there as far either. So, you know, buy a good backpacking pad and spend the money on one to get started. You know, REI has the, if you go down to REI and then go in and check their garage sales, that garage sale is worth its weight in gold. That's where you'll be able to pick up good gear for less. Check out Facebook. Your Facebook Marketplace has a lot of good gear, guys, and you don't have to spend that much money. Now, sleeping bag wise, that's up to you. If you think you can get that thing clean enough, you know, having it washed or whatever, that's cool. You can pick up a used sleeping bag for a lot less money. Me personally, I buy new sleeping bags. I just like to have a new sleeping bag. So with the pads, you know, my sleeping bag was probably $350. And my pad, it's a Climix. And I like Climix because I can side sleep on it, and I'm a side sleeper. But that pad was only like $50. Another thing that I include in my sleeping kit, I guess you could call it my sleeping kit, is a pillow. I don't use any of my clothes anymore. I used to pack extra clothes with me, and I do not do that. I do not pack any extra clothes for like a pillow or anything like that, or change of pants. I do not pack any changes of pants. I'll leave some in my rig. That way, if we move areas all together, I could change into some clean pants and have those, and then I'll wash them in a creek or whatever. But I'm only going in with one change of clothes. So I don't have any pads for my head. So I take a pillow, and you could get these pillows and they fold up into nothing. And I'll tell you what, you get to be my age, I'm 53 now. In order to keep your neck from getting, you just get older, man. And it's a whole lot better if you have a pillow or something like that to keep you from getting all stiff and cranky. So a pillow is a very small thing to put in your pack. You'll never even know it's there when you're not using it. And it's a lifesaver. I'm telling you right now, it's a lifesaver. Okay, beyond the pillow, some people in my group, I won't name any names, Gage, carries a little chair with him. He just thinks that's worthy of having in the backcountry. He's young. He's in his 20s, so he could carry that chair. I'm not carrying a chair. I will lay on the ground. I don't care how dirty I get. I don't care. I will not carry a chair because it's extra weight that I have to carry in my 50-year-old body. But, you know, you can find those chairs. I have a couple of those, and I used to pack them. If you see some early pictures of me backpacking into the wilderness, you'll see my pack was just stupidly big, and there's no reason for it. So a pillow, my cooking kit now, I have a cooking kit that I've had for years. It's an old Coleman Peak. They used to make this aluminum Coleman Peak box that you could put all your stuff in, and it's worked for me great for years. So it like the top of it could be a frying pan and the bottom is like a pot. And if you guys watch any of our videos, you'll see me using it in the videos. It's a really cool system, but I pack everything that I want in there. I pack one canister. One canister is going to work for you for 3 or 4 days. I get 5 sometimes out of them because I don't eat a ton of like freeze-dried meals. I don't really cook a lot. I do for my coffee. That's my big thing, is boiling water for coffee. But anymore, I'm not a big Mountain House eater, and there's a lot different ways. And we're going to do a whole different podcast on that. I'll tell you how I eat out in the woods. And you see my physique, I have a lot of stored energy, so I don't bonk like a lot of guys do. This year, I'm taking a lot of that off before we hit the woods, but I won't bonk like some of these young guys. Some of these young guys that have really low body fat out there, they have to pack so much food with them. Going into the season with a little bit of fat on you is a good thing. It's, I don't mean, you know, go into the season from sitting on your butt and eating potato chips. That's not what I'm talking about. But having a little bit of fat on you and being in great shape is a good thing when you're hunting in the woods, because you're not going to bonk like some of these guys that are, man, I got people around me that have very, very, very low body fat, and they bonk pretty quick. With that said, my stove is an MSR Ultralight, I think they call it, and it folds up into about the size of two. If you take two lighters and tape them together, that's about the size that it is. I'll throw two lighters in that packet. I have my canister in there. I have my spoon in there, and I have the holder. There's a little holder that holds the pots when they get hot, and I have that in there. And then, of course, I fill the rest of it up to keep all that stuff from rattling with coffee packets. And I used to use Full Draw, which I love to death. But here last couple of years, I've used Folgers. Folgers makes a pretty good and when you're out in the woods, man, any coffee is good. But they're like a tea bag. Folgers makes a tea bag coffee. And you can go down and get those and then just stuff them around all that stuff so it doesn't rattle. So that's my cooking setup, and that's basic. I mean, that's really basic. That's all I do is that. The next thing is clothes. Now, my tops, I've been experimenting with all the brands. I've wore Kuyu. I've wore First Light. I've wore Sitka, and all of them are good. Every brand that I've wore so far is good. I'm going to try some Drake stuff this year because I like the idea that Drake is a little bit less expensive. So you guys could see that work out in the woods. And I mean, shoot, if they're all coming from China anyhow, we might as well. There's no sense in, unless it works, which it's going to be hard for me to get away from my First Light Merino. I probably will never get away from that. As far as my socks and my underwear has been First Light Merino. Now I have found a replacement for the First Light Merino, and that is Reebok Walmart underwear. The new stuff is absolutely amazing. It works as good as my Merino did. And my Merino, they break down after a while. I have huge thighs, so it kills the merino underwear. I probably get 2.5 seasons out of a piece of underwear. I wear it all the time, though. I'm not just wearing it hunting. I wear it all the time. Underwear is the most important thing in your kit. There's also some XPG, I think they call them. Wrangler XPG. They're like backpacking pants that they sell at Walmart, and they're like $28. And they hold up almost as well as my Sitka stuff. You know, and it comes, they all come from China. So it's not like you're not buying American or whatever. So you might as well save yourself some bucks. If you don't have the bucks. Now, I will say this, they don't fit nearly as well as the Sitka or the First Light or my Attack pants from Kuyu, which have been around for 10 years now. They won't hold up like that. But at the same time, you're talking $28. So if you're getting new into this and you want some, I'm telling you right now, they work good. I wear suspenders with all my stuff, and they work just as good as a lot of my other stuff with suspenders. But here's what I do is I take one change, or not one change. I take what I have on, and then I take a puffy, and I take another like sweatshirt, and that's for elk season. And my sweatshirt, I mean by my merino. And so if I'm going to spend money with the big three, you know, with Sitka and those guys, it's going to be on merino wool. Drake has some. So I want to switch over to Drake because the prices are quite a bit lower. And it looks like that they have, that they're starting to move with their big game line. They're starting to do some things like merino and things like that. So I'm going to try them out too. It's going to be pretty hard with First Light because First Light, man, is their merino, I think, is the best merino I've ever used so far. So one of the things is, you know, I use Drake stuff out in the duck blind, and they've moved into, it's called non-typical. And then they have Old Tom, which those two garments are for turkey hunting and for hunting deer, and a lot of it's deer hunting for deer hunting for whitetails. But you know, they're moving into some of the western hunting, and they're creating some new patterns and some new pants and stuff like that. So with that said, regardless of brand, I carry one set of clothes on me, and then I'll carry undergarments, and I'll carry three pairs of underwear and three pairs of socks if I'm going to be in for 3 or 4 days. So if I'm going to be in for longer than that, I will carry, you know, accordingly. One of the other things that I've thrown in and has been super, it's something that we should all have, because if you don't, you're leaving yourself kind of in danger, and that's a raincoat and an ultralight raincoat. And I don't care what brand you use. I got a little Cabela's Instinct, and it folds up about the size of a pop can. But boy, it'll get you out of a problem. You know, you can still get hypothermia in summer when you get into one of those big thunderstorms that, you know, they're spitting down ice and rain and all that. I've been out there when it's got really, really, really cold, and a lot of times it's not as dangerous, you know, because once the thunderstorm passes, things start warming back up again. But I don't want to put myself in that situation and have to worry about it. So those are, that's a lot of what I look at in the clothing. Another thing is, if you get wet, you could get inside your sleeping bag and then sleep it off, you know, under a shelter. And a lot of times you're going to dry out your clothes in that. My sleeping bags catch a lot of crap because I sleep in my clothes. Now, if you're expecting it to be colder, take a pair of puffy pants with you too. And then you can sleep inside. You can change out of your cold clothes. I don't typically change out of that stuff because if I stay in it, my body heat will dry it out throughout the night. But if you have a puffy, you know, you just have that extra layer of warmth inside your sleeping bag. And like I said, yeah, my sleeping bags are pretty beat up and they get a lot of dirt in them and pine needles and stuff like that. And matter of fact, I brought mine out here the other day for My wife wanted to see what she's got one too, and she wanted to see what if mine was bigger or whatever. And she started looking at me. She's like, "Oh my gosh, that thing's horrible! How come you? How do you get it that dirty?" And I said, "Well, you know, I'm sleeping in it with my clothes on." So that's the way that I do it. So you know, like I said, your underwear is the biggest thing that'll stop you. If you start getting chafing really bad, you're not going to hunt near as hard. So use your underwear accordingly. And then outside of that, of course, your pants on the outside. Now, I've had friends that have ripped their thighs open and on their pants, and they just keep hunting. You just can keep hunting through that. But underwear, man, chafing is not a good deal. So that's what I take for clothes. The next thing is a light. And so I use a headlamp. Last couple of years, I've been messing around with different headlamps. I like a rechargeable one because I take, two batteries in the woods, and I have a solar panel, so I can recharge those throughout the day. I could just put the solar panel on the back of my bag and then, you know, have a USB cable go to the battery while I'm out walking. That's why I like a rechargeable, because then I could run everything off of that solar panel and then I could get energy. I don't have to carry double A's or any kind of other battery with me. Now, I know people that have, and you know, a good double A light's going to probably last you most of a week in the woods. That's if you're going to bed when we do. We don't stay up past dark very much because we're pretty much tired. So we go to bed, and then we're not out there a lot until we get something down. If we get something down, you know, we're going to be out there for a while. So we carry a headlamp. I don't carry extras. I've not had a problem with that yet. I hope I never do. But if that happened, I would just have to borrow the light from Gage. And that's why we have, you know, we're going doubles. Then I would just have to work off of his light, off of his lamp, and we just deal with it. But that's, you know, part of hunting, and that's part of the adventure in the backcountry. But a good headlamp, and I'm using I can't even remember the name of the brand, but make sure that it's a good quality, not going to break on you headlamp. The next thing is, like I said, the solar panel. I have a Nomad 10 solar panel. It folds up. It's kind of on the older end of the solar panels now. There's a lot of different ones out there, but this one's, I bought it early on and I've used it for years and it works really well. It'll charge an 8,000 milliamp hour battery in one day. So if I keep in like 6 or 7 hours. So it keeps up my, my batteries real well. And, if you're using it, like I have 220 milliamp batteries, 20,000 milliamp batteries. and I use, that's what I keep with me. If I keep the pads on them, they'll last me for, easily a week. You know, if you got one of the newer cell phones, they don't use near as much, battery, especially if you have them on airplane mode, like we do. We take them off airplane mode to, you know, maybe get a text out or something like that. And then we put them right back on airplane mode. But that solar panel is really, really good to have. It just, you know, with us up there, filming, we could actually charge our, camera. I shoot a Sony A6400 and I can charge that off of the solar panel. You can just do it off of USB and it'll charge those batteries. So it's really one of those items that is real versatile for us, and we use the heck out of it. the next thing is extra tab string and a stringer. So those are the big things that we carry bow wise. That's one of the reasons I hunt with the trad bows. I don't have to carry very much extra stuff. So I carry a tab. And I've been shooting a tab for the last couple of years. If you have, shoot a, you know, a glove, carry an extra glove with you, it's nothing to carry those. You know, that fits into very little space, has no weight to it. And then an extra string, same thing. It'd be a bad day if you had a string that got cut or started unraveling on you and you're afraid to pull back on your bow. That'll ruin a good hunt for you. Say you're in that bulls one night and you go to bed this happens to us all the time. We get into bulls and we're like, okay, we're going to stay right around here and we'll get into them tomorrow. And we'll get up and follow them to their bedding spot and then we'll call once they get bedded. Well, if you say you something happens to your bow, you know, things happen. And you cut half of those strands on your string. Are you going to pull that thing back if you get into elk the next morning? And you don't want to walk back 8 miles back out. It's taking you, you know, half of the hardest part about elk hunting is finding the darn things. You don't want to give up on that just to go back and get a string. So it takes nothing to carry an extra string with you. So make sure you have one. That is probably one of my biggest tips that I can tell you is you want that string. And then, of course, the stringer. Your strings are going to creep on you. And you want to be able, once you get your bow tuned, you don't want that thing coming out of tune. You strap it onto your backpack and take it off all the time. The heat, cold, all those things will make that bow, that string stretch and get out of tune. I like shooting a bow that'll handle a fast flight string for that reason, so I don't have to deal with it as much. But at the same time, fast flights, I've even had those guys stretch on me. So make sure you take a stringer. Now, how do you know where your brace height is? Well, you could take a bow square with you and check it every morning, or you can mark on your arrows when you have it braced at the height that you've tuned it at, mark on your arrows where they meet the riser. And I'll tell you, this is a trick that I've used for years because it will save you. It will save a lot of time, effort, and money if you just mark that where it meets the riser. And when you put that arrow on there, every morning I put an arrow on, I look at it, and I'm like, yep, I didn't have any creep in my string. I'm good to go. It's shooting where it was shooting when I was, you know, practicing and getting ready for the season. And I'll tell you what, walking into the field knowing that your bow is ready is that's money. That helps you. All of traditional bow hunting is confidence, you guys. I don't care how you come to be able to shoot the way that you're shooting. You aren't going to hit anything unless you're confident. And I'll tell you right now, 99% of your shot at the final, right at that very moment before you kill an elk, it's about confidence. That's the biggest thing that you have going in your direction. That's why I say before you, because I've seen guys, you know, just not think that they could do it. And most of the guys that hunt trad stuff, and a lot of you guys are listening to this, probably hunt your compounds and then shoot your trad during the whole year and then pick up your compound to go hunt with. And it's because you don't have the confidence in it. I'm telling you, you could get that confidence and you don't want to lose that because your bow goes out of tune. So, that's just a tip that I use. Another thing that I do a lot, this is kind of a side note, is I hunt small game, and that's going to build your confidence. And it's another thing where you're out and you're putting that bow in the same kind of environment that's going to be an elk season. So that bow is going to do all those weird things that it's going to do in elk season rather than, you know, at the bow shop or at the range. So I would definitely get out and do some small game hunting and then have an arrow that's marked and check your brace every morning. Check your brace. Okay, the next thing is I have a sharpener, and I use the WorkSharp guide sharpener, not just for my bow, but for my knives as well. I carry two knives, and I'll talk about that in a bit, but that WorkSharp sharpener works really well. It's fast. It's got a rough side and a smooth side, and it's a diamond side. It even gives you the angle that you should be at, and then it's got a stroping pad for if you guys want scary sharp broadheads. Start stroping your broadheads. You know what I mean by that? That's leather. So you put a little bit of brasso on the leather, and then you go backwards on that after you've sharpened your blades, and it gets them so beautifully razor sharp. And I believe in razor sharp broadheads. Those things, the sharper the better. You can't get a broadhead sharp enough, as far as I'm concerned. So I carry the work sharp. In that work sharp, you can pull the sides off of it, and you can store a string in there. You can put a string in there. So if you're really looking at weight conscious, or not weight, but size, that's a cool feature to that broadhead, to that guide sharpener. And it's got a broadhead wrench also. So it's really cool. It's a neat little thing. So I said I carry two different knives. I carry a regular knife, just, you know, a regular skinning or gutting or whatever you want to call it knife, something that's, you know, like 4-inch blade to 6-inch blade, something I can resharpen. And then I carry the Outdoor Edge. They're those replaceable knife. Why they call that thing? I don't remember what they call it, but I love them. And I'll tell you what, I have done a whole elk with just that knife before. That bull that we killed with Kevin's, I did the whole thing with that knife and like two of those replaceable blades. It's so nice to be in the middle of an elk and not have to sharpen your knife. And if you know what you're doing by when you're cleaning an elk, you don't have to cut bone. You don't cut any bone. You just cut cartilage. And even off the head, you just go all the way up the neck and to the joint where where he can look up and down. I don't know what that joint's called. That sounds pretty stupid, I know. But and then you just pull down on it and you keep cutting cartilage away. You're never going to worry about cutting bone. Same with the legs. Same with hips. Same with the front shoulders. Only time that you could is if you're required to take the rib bones with you, but we don't. We cut the rib meat off. That's the only place. And I've done it. I broke a whole elk down with one of those knives and two blades. So it can be done. I like having the other knife around though, because you just don't know what's going to happen, right? That Outdoor Edge is a good knife, but being a replaceable blade knife, something could happen to that blade that it slips into. So it's pretty thin, so it could get bent or whatever. And if that happened, then you'd be up a poop creek and you wouldn't be able to do anything. So I like to have that other knife that I could have that's sharpenable. That's the extra thing that I do carry with me. And then, like I mentioned, the two external batteries, and I get the biggest ones that I could get, that I could charge, you know, like my whole camera system off of and all that, because I could recharge them a lot of times with my solar panel. One of the things that I'm looking into, but it's a little bit bigger, so I haven't really looked into it, is those little portable water turbines. Because you could do that overnight. If you can't buy a creek, you could have that thing charging your batteries while you're sleeping. And I think that would be just the cat's meow. I just don't know if I want to pack it. It's quite a bit bigger. So, the next thing is the phone. I always carry my phone. My phone has base map on it. It now, I did a full video using my phone here the other day. I have the Galaxy 23, and if you get, I mean, even the old 7s and 10s and all those took good pictures. You could take really good pictures with the thing. So say you're really getting back there and you don't want to pack a camera with you, but you want to videotape your whole hunt. Well, your phone, nowadays, these phones are awesome. And so I have that on there. I have a base map. Make sure that you have all of your data downloaded before you get in the woods. You know, if it's Onyx or GoHunt or Base Map or whichever you're using. But it works really well. I use my phone a lot. And you know, a lot of people say, well, this and that, but I think a phone is a very important tool for hunting. Almost so important that I would forget some other things before I forgot my phone. And the last thing is food. And I do enough food. I carry all sorts of types of food. We're going to do a whole nother podcast on food, but I'll tell you right now, I don't carry a ton of Mountain House or Peaks or any of those. I'm starting to do things differently with my food. Top Ramen is awesome. You can mix a lot of things. We find morel mushrooms, and we mix a lot of things in with Top Ramen. But I'll go over what I do for food later. I just thought that this podcast might get you guys out there and maybe help you out a little bit. So that's kind of what I wanted to do here. We'll jump into the food later. Hopefully this helps. You guys, leave me some messages. If you have any questions about my gear, I'd like to do a gear video too. Over at the Life Outdoors, we have a YouTube channel, The Life Outdoors. I'd like to do a gear video over there as well. All right, with that said, you guys, this stuff isn't near as scary as you think it is. There's a lot of used equipment out there. You do not need the best and the lightest and all that. Just get good quality stuff that's not going to break on you out there. And hopefully this inspires you guys to get out and do a little bit more of this adventure backcountry hunting. I'll tell you what, that's probably the biggest reason, one of the biggest reasons I hunt is not the meat as much as it is the adventure of it. We do, you know, of course, love the meat, and that's part of the adventure, but I think you guys would really enjoy getting out there. And if you have any questions about this, give me a holler. You guys could get a hold of me on Instagram, Facebook, barebowhunter.com. You could leave a message for me there, and I'll help you out as much as I can. So with that, shoot straight, and then listen next time when I talk about the food that we're going to take out now and in the backcountry.
Thanks for joining us for another installment of the Barebow Hunter podcast. Remember, we couldn't even be talking about this stuff if it wasn't for our public land. So go and support the people that are protecting it, backcountry hunters and anglers and TRCP. Also, if you'd like to see more of Barebow Hunters, go to our Facebook group, go to our Instagram at Barebow Hunters, like us, and hashtag all of your photos with your Barebow goodness in them, Barebow Hunter. We have a website as well. You can go over there, check out the rest of the podcast. We have videos, we have t-shirts and hats. Thanks again. Until then, shoot straight.